Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Kathy with a K.
And I'm Kathy with a C.
And this is Killer Destinations. Before we start this episode, we want to give a shout out to Mila and Ben, who celebrated a birthday on Sunday. Happy birthday! And we would be remiss if we also didn't give a shout out to Margaret, whose mom makes the best cookies.
Exactly. Margaret, go tell your mom to make me some cookies.
Same. Hope you have a great summer. When we all grew up, we all had that one boogeyman who struck fear in our hearts, made us hide under the covers, and left us afraid of being alone in the dark. Now, for some of us, it was the story of the man who only had a claw for his hand. For others, it was receiving a phone call when you're babysitting from a stranger and learning that they're in the house with you. In our story today, one such boogeyman had an influence over two young girls who had never met him. And you are not going to believe what they did in his honor. Now for us, we didn't have a name for our boogeyman, but these two young girls did. Slender Man. For those just joining us for the first time, we go to a different destination every week and we read about it just a little bit so we know where we're talking about.
Exactly. So today's destination is Waukesha, Wisconsin. Nope. That would be Wisconsin.
We apparently haven't visited there.
The seventh most populous city in Wisconsin, the original founders of Waukesha were the descendants of English Puritans who settled in New England in the 1600s. After the Revolutionary War, a wave of New England farmers headed west into what was then the wilds of the Northwest Territory during the early 1800s. The region was home to many indigenous tribes who practiced agriculture and trade. In 1836, Native American tribes formally lost title to the land when treatises were disregarded and they were forcibly removed by the federal army. 10 years later, the area was incorporated as the town of Prairie, but in 1847, the town changed its name to Waukesha. And it was clearly Native American in origin, but there was a debate as to whether the name came from the anglicized word for fox by the Chippewa, or whether it was named for the Potawatomi tribe leader. Potawatomi tribe leader, who was leading his people at the time the first European settlers arrived. Today, the city has a rich history, blending its heritage with modern growth and a thriving downtown area. Waukesha has a strong sense of community with a focus on education, the arts, and local businesses. Waukesha is also known as Spring City due to its famous Healing Springs, which once made it a popular resort town. But in 2014, no amount of healing water could wash away the stain left on the city by a grotesque figure haunting the nearby mountains.
On a sunny day in May of 2014, Greg Steinberg was enjoying a bike ride along a wooded stretch of Big Bend Road, which was just outside the Milwaukee suburb of Waukesha. The surrounding area was beautiful. It was park-like, tall trees, lots of nature everywhere. And as he rounded a bend, he suddenly slammed on his brakes because lying in the road was a young girl and she was covered in blood. So he ran over to her. She was conscious. She was able to talk to him. And she said, "Please help me. I've been stabbed." So Greg, of course, immediately called 911. And while he waited for first responders to arrive, he held pressure on some of her wounds. He asked the girl what her name was, and she said it was Peyton. And it was very obvious to him that she was in excruciating pain. First responders arrived. And as they got her into the ambulance, a Waukesha patrolman was there named Dan Klein. And he asked her, "Who did this to you?" And her response was, "My best friend, Morgan." So the patrol officer also asked her, "Where did it happen?" And she said, "In the woods." And that meant, Kath, that she had had to crawl through all of these woods around them to get to the road in the first place after having been stabbed to the point where she was just drenched in blood. At the hospital, she told Officer Klein that there was a second girl involved, somebody who she said was Morgan's friend, Anissa. And that was how she described her, not as their friend, but rather as Morgan's friend. And so, of course, police immediately set off to look for the girls. Now, when the doctors examined Peyton, they discovered 19 stab wounds. They were in her chest, her abdomen, her arms, and her legs. It hit a ton of vital organs. It was her liver, her pancreas, her stomach, and her heart. And in fact, the doctor said that one of the stab wounds was just 1 millimeter away from hitting a major artery. So she was rushed into surgery, and the doctors commented that it was a miracle that she didn't bleed out as she was crawling through the woods. Kathy Peyton was only 12 years old, and so were the other two girls.
So as Kathy said, the police began searching immediately for Morgan and Anissa, and they started at Morgan's house. In fact, they showed up to the front door in riot gear, and they started asking Morgan's mother, "Where's your daughter? Where's your daughter?" And she said, "She's at the park with friends." And the police officers were like, "No, she's not." And they didn't believe her. They thought that she was hiding her daughter. So they came into the house, they searched, and they didn't find anything. They also went to Anissa's mother and said, "Hey, we have somebody missing." And of course, Anissa's mom was freaking out, thinking that Anissa was missing. And she's like, "What are you doing? Where's my daughter?" You know, this kind of thing. And they're searching the house and they come up with nothing. But Anissa's mom goes to Morgan's house and finds her daughter's phone. And she's trying to figure out, like, she's looking at text messages. She's trying to figure out, where possibly is my daughter? And I feel like I should read this. So she finds in her daughter's notes some letters, and they're clearly goodbye letters. And one of them says, "This is my final wish to those who care. Do not grieve my absence, but remember me for who I was. I love and cherish you all and wouldn't do you harm." Now, of course, Anissa's mom shows the police, you know, "Oh my God, my daughter's missing. Here's, she gave this goodbye note, you know, what's going on," kind of thing. Well, patrolmen are driving all over Waukesha at this point. 5 hours after the attack, they find Morgan and Anissa walking on the side of the road. And they tell the police, "Oh, we're going to the Nicolet National Park and we're going to live in a mansion." Now, the Nicolet National Park was what? Like
200 miles away.
Exactly. 200 miles north of where they were. So anyway, the police are like, "Get in the car. You're coming to the station." So they take these 12-year-old girls to the station. They read them their Miranda rights. The 12-year-olds waive their rights, and then they get interrogated.
And of course, we all know Kathy's a lawyer. And so my first question was, and I know she doesn't know Wisconsin state criminal law, so I'm not trying to put you out there as Kim Kardashian, which, by the way, congratulations,
the way, yeah.
Kimmy.
Kimmy finished law school.
Woo-hoo! 6 years down, baby.
For those of you who are just new to the podcast, Kim Kardashian is sort of like our pet friend.
Yes, because I'm in the Killer Destination School of Law.
That's right.
Which is similar to apparently the one she went through.
Exactly. The Killer Destination School of Law might be slightly more sophisticated.
And more fun.
I'm kidding.
Definitely.
Yeah. So anyway, at one point, we'll have to show it to you. I made Kathy a
certificate.
Exactly. A School of Law certificate. And there's a picture of her and Kim Kardashian on it. So one of these days we'll have to put that up.
Exactly.
We think we're funny. Anyway.
We are funny.
Yeah. So it was a big deal. Yeah.
And so the question was, if they're 12 years old, why was there not a parent with them?
Yes. And apparently in Wisconsin, I had to look this up, you can interrogate a minor or a minor outside the presence of their parents. And so I don't know all the circumstances.
Which is crazy. Apparently you can be 10 in Wisconsin.
You're thinking of
a different state?
No. You're thinking of adult court. You're thinking of...
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But good job, though. You're thinking. Someone's got a thinking cap on.
Thank you. I don't do that very often, so it's hard, Barbie.
Yeah. So anyway, during the interrogation, so what the detectives did is they separated the girls. And when you're in an interrogation, and Kathy's been in a couple, but...
sadly, yes. That's a story for another day.
But, you know, there's a lot of downtime because they talk to one of the witnesses and then they might go want to go verify with the other witness. So there's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of downtime. Everything is on video. So during the questioning of each of these girls, they both admit that they tried to kill Peyton. And each of them said it was necessary. They said they did it for a man. And when police asked who this man was, the response was Slender Man. Police, of course, are like, who's Slender Man?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I went back and looked up the origins of Slender Man, and I'm going to give you a little bit of description. You guys know who Slender Man is, I'm sure.
Yes, even we did.
Exactly. So, so he's a fictional internet character created in 2009 by a guy named Eric Knudsen. And Eric was on a thread in the Something Awful internet forum, and there was a Photoshop contest. And they basically said, take a real photo, manipulate the photo to make it look like a paranormal image. So Eric, who, by the way, was using a pseudonym, contributed two black and white photos. And in both of the photos, there were groups of children. And then he gave the character that he photoshopped into the photo the name Slender Man. You guys know him. He's super tall, like unnaturally tall.
Like 14 feet tall.
Yeah. And he's very skinny, a dark suit, a dark tie, completely faceless, nothing discernible that you could make out. In both of the photographs that Eric submitted, there were kids in the photos. But what Eric did is he went one step further. And so he added language to the photos. And most people just submitted like straight pictures that were manipulated. So the first quote under one of the photographs was, "We didn't want to go. We didn't want to kill them, but its persistent silence and outstretched arms horrified and comforted us at the same time." And then he wrote, 1983, photographer unknown, presumed dead. And the quote under the second photograph read, "One of two recovered photographs from the Sterling City Library blaze, notable for being taken the day which 14 children vanished and for what is referred to as the Slender Man. Fire at library occurred 1 week later. Actual photograph was confiscated as evidence. 1986, photographer Mary Thomas, missing since June 13th, 1986.
It had a backstory.
Yeah. So he submits this very creative and very creepy thing, and it goes viral, as you can imagine. And I remember kids drawing pictures of Slender Man.
Yeah.
Like, it went crazy all over the world. And there were Reddit threads, "What did you do for Slender Man?" And I started reading those, and I was like, this is so crazy. Like 10-year-olds sneaking out of their windows at night, going into dark forests looking for Slender Man. I would not do that now.
No, I wouldn't either.
And I like scary things. I really do enjoy scary things. But anyway, so Slender Man became a thing in the movies, the documentary, Halloween costumes.
But we do grow up with Boogeyman. There's always somebody there that we have lurking in the dark. And we were talking about this.
Yeah.
It's just urban legend in general. You
right.
know, like at the beginning, we kind of talked about it, right? It was the Bloody Hook, that two people were in a car and they heard something outside in the woods. They were like parked off to the side so that, you know, they could hook up without their parents knowing they were doing it. And they heard something and got scared. So they drove off really quickly and they get home and open the car door and there's a hook in their car outside of their car door handle. Or the
Bloody Mary.
Oh, you love Bloody Mary. You've talked about that.
That scared the heck out of me. Like, I could never do it. I'm 100% positive something would be in the mirror if I did that.
But it even goes so far as like back in the mid 80s, maybe there was Pop Rocks. And if you drank soda while you had Pop Rocks, your stomach would explode.
Yeah, you would die. Like
And which they're still around today. Yeah. So clearly that was debunked. But
or like getting into your car alone at night and you're driving away and then you see the face of a man in your rearview mirror like, ah. You know, like, but anyway, so that is Slender Man became that for young people.
But look at the staying power. 5 years later,
you
still had these girls who weren't like, oh, that's so lame. What's the new one?
Right. Yeah.
Wow, I'm actually kind of impressed that they had that kind of focus. They weren't like scrolling to get to the next thing. They should have gotten credit for that, at least. So now Morgan's talking to detectives. She's in the room just as Anissa is in a different one. And she told them that they had to kill Peyton because if they didn't, Slender Man would kill their families. Mm-hmm. And that was part of this shtick, right? You needed to sacrifice those you loved to protect others who you apparently loved more.
So. Right, exactly.
But, you know, that was how you protected your family. And so she said that they needed to become proxies of Slender Man, and this was their way of doing so and proving to him that they were loyal to him and whatever cause he may have represented.
Right. And then once they did that, their families would be safe.
And then they could go live with him in this mansion somewhere in the woods.
Right.
Which why you'd want to live with somebody that scary looking, I'm not sure. But
I don't know.
Morgan told police officers that she and Anissa had discussed killing Peyton for about 6 months. It had started in December of 2013, and they had decided that they would kill Peyton in conjunction with a birthday sleepover at Morgan's house. And so this actually happened 6 months after they first started talking about it. Initially, it was going to be Anissa who was going to kill Peyton, correct?
Correct.
She really wanted to prove the skeptics who didn't believe in Slender Man wrong and prove herself worthy of this man. The original plan was for the three girls to sleep over at Morgan's house for her birthday, and then Morgan and Anissa agreed that they were going to wake up at 2 a.m., put duct tape over Peyton's mouth, and then they would stab her in the neck and she would bleed out. But they didn't attack Peyton during the night, and I asked Kathy why, and she said, you know how kids are, they just probably slept in.
They probably just didn't wake up.
But they decided that they would go to the park and kill her in the bathroom there, because then all the blood that came out of her would go into the bathroom drain. And they also thought that once she was dead, they could close the stall door and nobody would even see her there. Now, after killing Peyton, they agreed that they would then begin the trek to the Nicolet National Forest and live with Slender Man. So they have the deal all set out.
So a week after Peyton's attack, Detective Shelley Fisher interviewed her and just got all of the details. Now, they had already undergone a very extensive interview with the police, and the police knew a lot about what was going on, but they needed to hear it from Peyton herself. And so Peyton said that for Morgan's birthday, she and Anissa were invited to spend the night, and Morgan's dad took them to a roller skating rink, and they had fun and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So after breakfast, Morgan suggested they go to a nearby park. And Peyton told the detective that Morgan wasn't normally allowed to go to the park by herself, but because her mother said, oh, it's your birthday and you're with two friends, go ahead and go. So Morgan packed a bag of food and took some photographs, which Peyton thought was weird, but, you know, whatever. She didn't question it.
And they were family photographs of Morgan's, correct?
Correct. Like, exactly. Pictures of her family. After playing in the park for a bit, they went into the bathroom and Anissa punched Peyton in the head. So Peyton hits her head on the wall and she's like, what the heck was that? Anissa thought Peyton was going to be rendered unconscious.
Like crumpled to the ground.
Exactly. And when that didn't happen, she made an excuse for it. Like,
Oops, my fist slipped.
It was an accident. Something like that. So Morgan says, come into this bathroom stall. I want you to look at this graffiti, this vandalism on the wall. So the three girls go into a bathroom stall. Peyton looks around and she's like, there's nothing here to look at. So Morgan takes Peyton's arms and holds them behind her back. Peyton is now face to face with Anissa and they're just kind of staring at each other, but nothing happens. And so Morgan says to Anissa, I thought we agreed that you were going to do this. I need to talk to you in the next stall, which is such a 12-year-old thing to do. So Peyton is like, huh? Yeah. So Anissa and Morgan go into the next stall and have a little conversation. And basically they're like, we got to do this. You know, you said you were going to do this, whatever. We got to get this done, blah, 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 blah. Let's go do it outside. So they all emerge from the bathroom and Morgan suggests they start playing hide and seek. So they do. They play like a round of hide and seek and they're on their second round of hide and seek. And then Peyton is hiding and Anissa says, lay down on the ground. So Peyton lays down on the ground. Morgan jumps on top of her legs. And this is when the attack began. As Kath said, Anissa was supposed to be the stabber, but she couldn't do it. So she gives the knife to Morgan and Morgan says, well, I'm not going to do it until you tell me to do it. This kind of thing. So this backstory was happening, obviously, outside of Peyton's earshot. So now Peyton's on the ground. Morgan jumps on her legs and brought her face real close to Peyton's face and whispered, I'm so sorry. And then Morgan began repeatedly stabbing Peyton as she was pushing her down while Anissa had yelled, do it now, go ballistic, go crazy. So Morgan is stabbing Peyton and Peyton screams, I hate you. I trusted you. And later we find out that while Morgan was stabbing Peyton, she was counting in her head all the stabs. And so when it was all said and done, she told Anissa, I stabbed her 17 times. I mean, she was only two off.
Right.
Like it was clear that she was counting. Peyton had gotten up and she's terrified and she's like, I can't see. I can't walk. Morgan tells her, lay down on the ground because you don't want to bleed out so soon. You'll bleed less if you lay down. So Peyton lays on the ground and the two girls say, we're going to go get help. We'll be right back. And they run off.
Don't go anywhere.
Instead of going and getting help, which they never intended to do, they just ran off down the road and left their bleeding friend on the ground who managed to crawl to the road where fortunately she met biker Greg. After the attack, Anissa and Morgan went to Walmart. Morgan had taken the knife and wiped it off on her shirt. Morgan rinses her hands off. They put the knife in the backpack and they go. They go on their merry way where they're going to walk 200 miles and go live with Slender Man. So this, of course, is when police came across them and picked them up.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
So Peyton was just a bubbly, shiny, outgoing girl. She liked people. She liked to be friends with people, and everybody liked her. She became friends with Morgan when it became clear to her that Morgan really didn't have any other friends. She was kind of quirky. She didn't really fit in. Sometimes she acted like she was a cat. But Morgan was also above average intelligence, and she was a good student at school. And so she and Peyton became best friends.
Yeah.
At least in Peyton's mind, right. They were best friends. And so they'd been best friends for just over a year when Morgan actually tried to kill her. Now, Peyton was not particularly good friends with Anissa, but knew her through Morgan. Morgan and Anissa both lived in the same apartment complex, and they rode the school bus together every day. Anissa also thought that Morgan was her best friend, too. That's why three girl best friends, especially in those like tween teen years, never, ever, ever work. Ever. If you're in the middle of that, get out. But at school, Anissa was also an outsider. So as a group, these were not the three most popular girls at Horning Middle School.
Right.
One horny mother called them misfits and said they weren't girly girls.
Okay, when Kathy says she didn't mean a horny mother, Horning. Horning was the name of the school.
I said Horning Middle School.
I know, but it sounded like you're like one horny mother.
I did not mean to say that, if that's what you heard. So one middle school mother called the girls misfits and said they weren't girly girls. They didn't like dancing, clothes, makeup, that kind of thing. Instead, the three of them were into sci-fi and fantasy. So they were more like Harry Potter, super active fantasy life.
Star Trek.
Like to act like they were cats.
They liked to play Minecraft. Like they were, you know, they had avatars. Like they would have these conversations with imaginary people and all this kind of stuff. So,
yeah. So they didn't fit in.
If you go to YouTube, you can watch police interviews of these girls.
8,000 of them.
Yeah, there's a
They're
lot.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. I have not seen an entire segment, like a true uninterrupted interview. You know, they're kind of picking and choosing. But it's really interesting because I think when you watch these videos, you see what you want to see.
You see what you want to perceive.
Yes. Like if you're somebody who thinks like, oh, these 12-year-olds are total sociopaths. Only a sociopath could do this. You watch the video and you're like, mm-hmm. Yep. Uh-huh. If you're somebody who thinks, oh, they have to have been mentally ill, then you see that.
Right.
When I was looking at Anissa's interviews, there were various parts. Well, both of the girls, honestly, the interviews were pretty chilling. But Anissa seemed to me to be a little bit more remorseful, a little bit more human. She did say that it was necessary to kill Peyton and that she did believe in Slender Man. Morgan said the same thing, like it had to be. Yep. It was necessary.
And they were protecting their families.
Right. And they asked Morgan, do you feel remorse? And she did not. It was strange watching this little girl, and their booking photos are ridiculous.
Yes.
I mean, they're babies.
They're babies.
Yeah, they're babies. And so seeing this little girl behave in such, it did feel sociopathic, like there was no emotion whatsoever, but they did not have an appreciation of what they were facing. And one of them, I can't remember which one, it might have been Anissa, said, am I allowed to go back to school because I haven't missed a day since third grade? Like they had no appreciation
of the severity.
Correct.
Well, one of the clips I saw of, I believe it was Morgan, where they were asking her about, did you really have to kill Peyton? And she was standing up. I'm not sure why she was standing up, but they were in an interrogation room. And she kind of flipped her arms and said, well, it just had to be done. And then did a twirl.
Yeah. Everything was super unreasonable.
Yes.
And it was almost like you're watching a play.
They were in a fantasy land.
Yeah. And there were parts when detectives went out of the room to talk to Anissa, Morgan would be dancing. She was like in the interrogation room by herself. Obviously, the video's rolling and she's just dancing around the room.
That must have been the clip I saw. Maybe she was talking to herself, saying it just had to be done.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because why else would they let her twirl around in an interrogation room while they were in there?
Oh, I don't think they're going to tell her not to do anything. Okay. I think they're just going to let her be. Like, you, as long as you're talking to us.
Yeah, keep talking.
You can stand on your head.
Right.
You know? If you're curious, look at the video footage because it's chilling and it's so sad. To me, it's so
sad. It's a combination of the two.
Yeah. And it's like, how did you believe you are 12 years old? How did you believe Slender Man was real?
But it was something we were talking about earlier, though, is that especially for young girls, especially for young boys, too, if you aren't developing that executive function in your brain, if that hasn't developed yet,
yeah.
And you're so involved in this fantasy world. I mean, that was actually part of it. Like in high school, when the boys are so, and not to be sexist, because I'm sure some girls love Dungeons and Dragons too, but that became such a huge part of their identity.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't real. But to them, it very much was. And if these guys are playing Harry Potter, did they think they were just, you know, witches and could get rid of the spell?
Right. I was reading something about this and they were talking about how psychologists have a phrase called discounting. And it's where your rational inner self talks you out of your fearful, impulsive, emotional self. It's like that's what happens as we naturally progress. And they say by the time you're 8, people start discounting. Like an 8-year-old can tell the difference between fact and fiction, reality and unreality. I mean, right. Essentially. But they were saying that this all has to do with maturation of the frontal lobe, which seems to be the experts in the field think it happens at 25. But with these girls, everybody was thinking like, okay, they didn't have any discounting ability. They had these wild imaginations. They believed that Slender Man was real and nobody was like slowing the horses.
Right.
Nobody was saying, no, we really shouldn't be killing our friend.
Yeah.
You know, and so they didn't have that discounting ability. And so they kind of went into what was happening to each of them. And I know Anissa's parents were going through a divorce and she was feeling extremely depressed and having difficulty with it. And Morgan apparently by nature was fantastical. And so the two girls were just drawn together.
And they were the misfits. They were the outcasts.
Correct.
Yeah, it was all just tragic. And, you know, part of it, the discounting is what I imagine Peyton probably went through when she was in that stall. Morgan was holding Peyton's arms behind her back in the bathroom stall and said to Anissa, I thought you were going to do this. And Anissa said, I thought you were going to do it.
Yeah, like they just had doubts.
And they let go of Peyton. They went into a separate stall and Peyton stayed because the rational part of her head wasn't working. Like, you're in danger. Get out. Instead, it was, these are my friends. I'm fine. You know, like,
yeah,
if your friend put your arms behind your back, are you not going to fight that just a little bit?
Yeah.
Because now you're vulnerable.
But you know, when you're a kid, it's like, I can still think of certain friends in my life. Like, it's like, or I'm going to call them friends in quotes, where you knew there was just something off about them.
Yes, absolutely.
But it's like, yeah, but we're playing. But we're playing. It's fine. It'll all be fine.
Right,
we're playing, you know? But it's
they live
like,
down the street. We know their families. Our parents are friends. Yeah.
So I read somewhere.
Wait, really quickly. Yeah. That is by no means an insult to Peyton at all. That
correct.
Wasn't saying that she did the wrong thing. I'm just saying like that is part of the discounting or not the maturation and development because you're trusting your friends. Your friends are your friends. They're not going to do anything to you.
In a million years,
yeah.
Who thinks she's going to get stabbed?
Right.
No one.
Both of the girls were charged as adults with attempted first degree murder. They had separate lawyers and separate cases. So in Wisconsin, if you are a juvenile over the age of 10, you can be charged as an adult. And these two girls were because they were being charged with first degree intentional homicide. And if they were charged as juveniles, the state would lose all jurisdiction and oversight over the girls once they hit the age of 18. Absent, obviously, some other court proceeding that would give the state the right to still have some sort of jurisdiction over them. But typically at the age of 18, all oversight would have ceased.
Right. Unless there was a separate charge where they were adults, then it's like black letter. Like, you're a juvenile, you're done at 18.
But in adult court, as these girls were now charged, the state retained oversight for the entire length of whatever sentence they were given upon conviction. So because they were juveniles charged as adults, they were forced into psychological examinations.
Yeah, their attorneys hired people, but also the court appointed a psychologist and said, go figure these chicks out.
Of course, the defense attorney said, no, this isn't fair because this is the one and only incident of any sort of violence in these girls' lives in their entire lives.
Yeah, therefore, don't put them in adult court.
Right. But according to the court, the seriousness of what they did this one time outweighed all the other factors.
So during the course of the criminal matter, Morgan was found incompetent to stand trial. So she's arrested in May of 2014. In August, the judge is like, dude, you're incompetent to stand trial. And it's a basic standard. It's something like you understand the charges against you and you are able to assist in your defense. And so her attorneys were like, no, she is not mentally competent. So she was declared incompetent. Just a few months later, she was declared competent to stand trial. But because the attorneys for each of the girls were so upset that they were 12 and were being charged as adults, both of the cases went up on appeal. So everything is stayed during an appeal. The girls are in their respective psychiatric facilities and they're undergoing treatment. Morgan was diagnosed with schizophrenia and oppositional defiant disorder. And her doctors basically were like, she needs long-term mental health care. And one of the things I read, Kath, is that she would have audio hallucinations, visual hallucinations, and she just kind of leaned into things. Like she had lots of conversations with people that didn't exist. She pretended to be a cat.
It was her fantasy life.
Yeah, she totally lived in this fantasy life. And during the 19 months while her case was on appeal, Morgan refused to take medication. She did not believe that she was schizophrenic. She did not think she suffered from any kind of mental illness. Like she believed Slender Man was real. As solid as we are sitting at this wood table, one of the doctors basically said, you know, not everyone with schizophrenia is dangerous. They call it a fixed delusional belief. Because this fixed delusional belief told her to go harm someone and the rational part of her brain couldn't reject that as being false and that she actually acted on it. That's what made her a danger to herself and society. Another expert testified when they were sort of like in the competency phase and all that kind of stuff, that it is very notorious for schizophrenics to go off medication and to discontinue supervised care, which of course was evidenced by the fact that Morgan was pushing very hard against the need for medication. And so specifically with this type of mental illness, you need consistent and long-term care. Somebody with schizophrenia has to understand that their brain is broken, for lack of a better word, and it is causing them to act out certain fantasies and all this kind of stuff. And I've dealt with a lot of schizophrenics when I worked with homeless people for 5 years. I was a homeless outreach coordinator. And one of the things that the state of California was trying to do to address homelessness, and they did a lot of wrong things, but anyway, one of the things they tried to do was they wanted Medi-Cal to start paying for new schizophrenia medication. And it was a one-time injection that would have to happen every 6 months. And it was like $1,000. And so the state of California is like, okay, we're gonna look into paying this. So what drug manufacturers did, and I thought this was kind of smart, is they would go to places where people were actually doing outreach to homeless people. And they told me about this drug and I was like, oh my God, that's fantastic. Cause like, you know, I had a lot of people that I dealt with who had schizophrenia, but it's such a difficult problem because they just don't believe they have a problem. As real as you are sitting here, that's how certain they are that they actually right. hear voices and they see spooks and all this kind of stuff. So it's super tough. It's super tough. And so I would tell people like, hey, there's this shot. It's once every 6 months. This could help you. And everyone's like, no, thanks.
I'm good. You
know? Yeah. And also many of them have been injected against their will. So that didn't help. But as far as Anissa goes, she was diagnosed with persistent depressive disorder and a delusional disorder, which had calmed down since the time of the crime. And I strongly suspect, although I don't know, that's because she was separated from Morgan.
Probably.
And so they didn't have that interplay. And there was something else that she was diagnosed with, but I can't remember it. It wasn't schizophrenia.
It was called schizotypal personality disorder, which was basically a diminished ability to separate reality from fantasy.
So I think her separation from Morgan brought her back to reality sooner.
Both girls were housed in a serious juvenile offender program and eventually deemed competent to stand trial. As we said, both girls were initially charged as adults with first-degree murder.
Attempted, exactly.
Attempted first-degree murder. Thankfully, you're right. And both girls also entered pleas of not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. As the case wound its way through, Anissa's charge was actually dropped to attempted murder too, because she was not the person who stabbed Peyton.
Correct.
With Morgan, she actually eventually entered a guilty plea to attempted murder one, but the prosecution agreed that she did in fact have a mental disease or defect, which had them agree to a plea deal in which Morgan eventually pleaded guilty to attempted murder one, but she wouldn't be sent to prison for it.
Right. She was technically not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. And so literally in the court records, it literally says guilty, not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. And so you accept responsibility for the crime-ish, but you had a mental disease or defect, so you're not legally guilty. So it takes away the legal culpability. However, and as Kath said, no prison, but you got to go to a psychiatric institute.
Instead.
Yeah.
No gen pop for you.
Yeah, no gen pop. But yeah, so the prosecutors agreed to this for Morgan, who I don't think anyone disagreed with her diagnosis.
Exactly. And so basically, after the age of 18, she wouldn't have to even worry about going to prison at that point, but she would have to undergo continued psychiatric commitments. However, Anissa was treated differently. Although she didn't dispute the overwhelming evidence against the two of the girls, the prosecution did not believe that she had a mental disease or defect. So Anissa went on trial on the issue of whether she was not guilty by reason of mental defect. Now, Anissa's father was actually her first defense witness, and he described some family stressors in Anissa's life that Kath referred to earlier, but said overall he felt that his daughter was a normal child whose behavior never made him question her mental health. The doctors noted Anissa's age, her unlucky friendship with Morgan, as they termed it, and then the internet's supply of fake news about Slender Man and Anissa's immature adolescent brain. So Anissa went to trial, and the jury actually found her not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect.
You know, we were talking earlier just about, you know, her diagnosis and things like that. There were at least three, possibly four experts who testified, you know, that, you know, just all the whole buildup to everything,
right,
and her diagnosis. And even though they called it dissipated, her diagnosis has dissipated since the attempted murder. But the issue is, what was it on that day? You know, she might be healthier now, having been away from Morgan and not so rich in this fantasy world, but what was it on that day?
Like Morgan, Anissa did not get prison time, just a commitment to a mental health facility. Anissa was actually sentenced in 2017, so this is 3 years after the attempted murder of Peyton, to 25 years in a psychiatric institution. The following year, Morgan, after her guilty plea, was sentenced to 40 years in a psychiatric institution. However,
we know those just are numbers.
Exactly.
They're numbers.
Life in prison is not life in prison. And life in prison without parole, or LWOP, as I like to call it, is also not LWOP.
I know.
As evidenced recently by the Menendez brothers.
That's true. That's
so
very true.
Anissa was actually granted conditional release in 2021. So this is just 4 years after she was sentenced to 25 years in a psychiatric institution. After the murder and then waiting for trial, plus the time she had spent in the mental institution, she only served a total of 7 years. She does remain under court supervision, and she also must adhere to strict monitoring conditions that includes GPS and also psychiatric treatment.
Yeah. So when I looked at, what did I look at? I looked at, I think, the minute orders in her case or something. And I want to say,
I'm sorry, lawyer, what would a minute order be?
It's just boring paperwork.
Okay.
But
she just likes to talk fancy.
Anissa wore an ankle monitor until 2023. And then after 2023, they said, okay, you can take the ankle monitor off, but she was still under conditions of her release, but I don't know what they were.
And like had to check in with a parole officer maybe or something like that?
I am assuming it was more specific to mental health. I'm assuming it was more like case management, that kind of thing.
Now, Morgan, right now, this is May of 2025. Right now, Morgan is currently set to be released from the Winnebago Mental Health Institute, where she's currently being housed. Her release was actually supposed to take place last month, so in April of 2025, but it was halted when attorneys realized that Peyton would live only 8 miles from the group home where Morgan was supposed to go. And Kath, it turned out Peyton's family had not been consulted about any of this.
Right. So like Peyton's family finds out. And so Peyton's mom basically, I don't know if she went to the court hearing or was at the court hearing on Zoom, but she tells the judge, this is what she says. Peyton has worked incredibly hard to heal from the profound trauma she endured. She deserves the right to engage in everyday activities such as grocery shopping or visiting the library without the agonizing fear of encountering the individual who held her down and stabbed her 19 times when she was just 12 years old. And of course, the judge agreed. The judge said, yep, go back to the drawing board. I'll give you 30 days to figure out where Morgan's going to live. And then you guys come back to court in June.
All three of these women now are either 22 or 23 years old, depending obviously on their birthdays.
They're still babies. Yeah. Like, I honestly, this case is so horrifying to me. And I hope that all of them are doing well. I want these girls reacclimated into society in a successful way. You know, it's this whole thing is so awful and sad to me.
And tragic.
Yeah, exactly. And Peyton, Kath, as you know, I was telling Kathy how I tried to find recent things online about her specifically and how she's doing. And I couldn't find anything except there was an interview that she gave
to ABC's 2020.
Yeah.
In 2019.
Exactly. So it's, you know, it's like over 5 years old, this interview.
And was 5 years after the stabbing.
Correct. So she was still a teenager.
Yeah.
In the interview, she talked about the circumstances of the stabbing. She didn't think that she was supposed to be alive. Like it's a miracle. Yeah. She recognized that it was a miracle that she was alive. And she admitted that she slept with scissors for a long time. She slept with scissors out of fear that somebody was going to come in her
room.
Underneath
her pillow, I think.
Exactly. And that she obviously had trust issues. But she also described herself as a survivor.
And she was hopeful and positive. Mm-hmm. She was now somebody who was able to see the good in people again. Peyton said that she actually had to make the decision to move forward and not be defined what happened to her when she was 12 years old. So she graduated from high school with honors, and she planned to go into the medical field because she was inspired by the doctors who saved her life.
That's pretty awesome.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
She said in this interview that she preferred to focus on moving forward in her own life rather than the fate of the people who tried to take that life from her.
Mic drop.
Boom.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for watching.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.